Hello, everyone, and welcome to session 4 of A New Republic of the Heart, a guide to being the change for real with Terry Patton. My name is Sherry, and I'm part of the Terry Patton support team.
Wholeness, that's our theme this week. And it's really delightful to me that it is our theme, because in a way, this is the real beginning. This is where we begin and end and are most fundamentally. So this gives us an opportunity to ground ourselves in our actual, deepest, most real relationship to everything we're considering together. And as we transition into the depth and sacredness that really are the context of this whole course and all of our meeting together, let's allow ourselves to drop in deeply and feel that wholeness. So please find your way to a comfortable posture with your spine as straight and vertical as is easeful for you. And take a few breaths. And with each exhalation, let yourself relax more deeply into the mystery of this moment. You know, every enlightenment, every profundity, even every moment of suffering is only real in some now moment. Now is infinitely deep. And even our pain and hurt and trauma are arising within a profundity of depth. That our wisest to deepest traditions tell us is by its nature profoundly okay. Even blissful. And so let us allow the whole quality of our attention to open up. You know, it is often said that attention is like the beam of a flashlight. And if you allow that flashlight beam to spread out like a floodlight, illuminating all the parts of your chest and belly and back. Just really allowing yourself to experience every part of every in-breath and out-breath. And then you relax it radically open, so that attention becomes a 360-degree sphere. There's a quality of wonder and brightness that appear. that we're there already, always. And as you relax and trust, let yourself notice. Let yourself relax as awareness, rest as the open feeling, intelligence that you are. And let yourself relax whatever appears to contract or limit your enjoyment of that inherent happiness. Not making it wrong for any experience to arise. Allowing whatever is. You can't mess it up. And yet you can always allow it to deepen, to open, to soften, and to blossom more fully. We can trust this. No matter what may come, and sickness, old age, and death are inherently part of life. Each moment of life is by its very nature whole, full, good. Beautiful. And this is the truth. We have gathered together to contemplate everything, the nature of this moment, this time on the planet. We've dared to gaze at things that terrify us and that bring forward pain and grief. Core koan or question, impossible riddle that I ask is, how can wholeness be in crisis? Somehow what is, is reality, the very nature of reality, is whole, not a problem. Our bodies aren't used to relaxing completely into this truth. But we can. We can relax a bit more. We can trust a bit more. And as we do, we find our way through veil after veil of reaction and disturbance to a foundation of okayness. Radical, real okayness. Let's allow ourselves to just rest in this. Wholeness for a minute or two in silence. In just a couple of minutes, I would love to engage with anyone who is able to ask a question live, ideally opening up your camera, but at least with live audio. So I want to invite you to raise your hand if you have a sense that there's something you'd like to ask or bring forward. But while you're finding your way to that, there are a few things I'd like to say about this week's chapter on wholeness and fragmentation. So the nature of wholeness does exceed subject-object consciousness. In the chapter, I say perhaps wholeness is so paradoxically all of the different ways we define it at once that it interrupts every distinction with a reunification. And therefore, by its nature, it can never be fully known in the terms of conventional subject-object consciousness. It is a radical mystery, perhaps intuitively grokkable only when there is no difference between the knower and that which is known. When we are wholeness, we understand wholeness. And except when we allow wholeness to completely pervade us and take us over, take over consciousness in a state of mind-blown amazement, then maybe we can begin to think from the whole to the parts in a way that gives birth to a very different worldview. I began to paraphrase the book there at the end. Well, there are a number of paradoxes in this chapter. One of them that I'd like to address just right here at the front is I say in this chapter that wholeness is both radical and relative. I'm saying essentially that we can use the same word for that which is unconditional, that which is unblemished by, you know, whatever horrific events might occur. There is a, you know, people often call it the divine, radical, prior condition of all arising conditions. It just, it's unblemished. Nothing can mess it up. We can't mess it up. It can't be messed up. It just is what it is. And what it is love. What it is wonder. What it is bliss. What it is the beauty, truth, and goodness, freedom, joy of all things. You know, it is an undifferentiated, not separateness that we can ultimately even feel whole bodily. The great yogas of India are about opening up the subtle anatomy so that the sushumna, the macrocosmic orbit of subtle energy going down the front and up the spine, magnified at the heart, this radical brightness can pervade the vehicle of the body-mind more and more fully, so that we become transparent to that wholeness can know itself as and through our body-mind. And radically awakened yogis and saints sometimes have this siddhi, this living energy, the presence of wholeness, so powerfully that in their presence we catch it. It's contagious. And like some of you remember the days of using a lot of magnetic tape for audio and video, there would be these very powerful magnets that would be used for bulk erase. When the presence of some really profoundly realized beings, people have an experience like that. They come into the presence and it's like the magnet erases the noise of the mind. And a kind of radical bliss is all that's left. They call that, whatever they call it, Buddha nature, satsang, the descent of the Holy Spirit. In a way, I did have an impulse to begin this book by invoking wholeness rather than the crisis. Because in a way, that is our right relationship to everything. We're arriving now at the place, in a way, that is our home, our real home base. And yet, this spiritual reality is often invoked and talked about and taught and even practiced in a way that dissociates us from conditional experience. That radical wholeness also shows up as my care, my desire to be kind, my desire to make a positive difference, and my courage, my integrity, my willingness to face all that is. And in a world in which so many are in such profound denial, it felt appropriate. My sense was that the place to begin a conversation of the level of seriousness that I think is necessary. Well, it was better to begin with that proverbial 2x4 across the forehead. But if we're to really be different, if we're to really address these problems with a different kind of consciousness than the consciousness that created them, it's good for us to wake up into this radical okayness, for us to be in touch as much as possible, as frequently as possible, for us to practice wholeness so that we can be a presence of care, a presence of that honors whatever it beholds, that sees the wholeness, that is the real nature even of all the fragments. When we look upon the one who would be our opponent, drawing a circle that excludes us or others that we care about, eyes that notice a deeper, wider circle that includes us and everything we care about, and the one who would have excluded us, a bigger circle. That's how we can be a presence. And actions in life, in the conditional realm, that reassert wholeness. That is how wholeness can reassert itself during a crisis of fragmentation through us. So I assert that wholeness is not just a noun, it's a verb. Wholeness is always like an immune response to a disease reasserting itself. And therefore, relative wholeness, making things better, being a presence of kindness, being a practitioner, becoming more conscious, becoming more healthy, more coherent, more intelligent, more functional, less bound. All of that, that's wholeness too. And in a way, we can use one word to include it all. It's true, from a philosophical perspective, we could separate that radical wholeness from relative wholeness. I don't do that here. And I don't do that here simply because what's really important is not a bunch of philosophical distinctions. What's important is intuiting wholeness, breathing wholeness, being breathed by that wholeness, and becoming a presence of wholeness. So I had a little debate about that with Ken Wilber, who would have preferred for me to make that distinction. And I remain deeply respectfully unrepentant. And I hope that resonates for all of you. Sherry, has anybody raised their hand? I don't see anything.
So not yet, Terry, not that I see.
Oh, well, we're going to have to meditate some more then. A live question from somebody. Maybe savoring this wholeness will become intolerably intense, and somebody will find the faculty of speech. Karen, would you raise your hand? I'd love to dialogue with you about the question you just texted to me privately.
Okay, there's Karen. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey there, how are you?
I'm great, good to see you.
Thank you, and you. The reason why I framed the question I did about, you know, is a type A personality, you know, hold being, compassion, while also being active. It's because in my hearing of, you know, wholeness and compassion, I think of it with being, like always in this state of equanimity, I guess is what I would say. And at the same time, there's, you know, the interaction, the, you know, passion or if you will, or energy of what can even be agitation at times, you know, and like, help me with sort of, you know, a way to hold that so I'm not passive. I guess that's it. I hear it as almost being passive.
Yes. Okay, great.
Actively engaged.
That's exactly. And of course, the book doesn't, you know, the book advocates for even activism. I use that word. As I said last week, I sometimes wish I hadn't used the word because it often has connotations of being adversarial. But being active as wholeness is exactly the impossible question that we're all holding. Because what we see is that people are very good at being active as separation and fragmentation and opposition and doubt and anger. Here. What is it for us to be active as wholeness in a way that's truly effective? What does that? And I speak about this a lot. In a way, it pervades the whole book. You're kind of saying, look, I've got tendencies. I'm a type A personality. I'm tending always to be active. And in a way, maybe I'm losing touch with some measure of wholeness. And I know how to deepen into an intuition of wholeness when I'm passive, when I'm quiet. Yeah, good. but how do I deepen into this intuition of wholeness in action, because there's a lot to do. And we all see there's a lot to do, you know, and thank goodness, Karen, that you're doing as much as you're doing, you know, in with a very wise, good heart. But we have to keep restoring our wholeness as we go. I mean, this is why it's a practice of inner work and outer work as a single, unbroken unity. And therefore, your question, like you know, really, you are already noticing and will continue to notice that I don't offer really simple formulaic answers to questions very often. Because
that's okay.
Yeah. What's going on right now is that humanity is awakening, and each of us is to some degree awakening. We might not be transparent, but we're beginning to become a little translucent to that wholeness. In moments, we're ecstatic. In moments, we're in love with all existence. In moments, we're in a state of mind-blown wonder and amazement and joy. In moments, we're awake. In moments, maybe we have fewer of those high states, but we our deep care and our deep connectedness to all that is alive is so full that we're not really separate from anything. All of us have those moments, and we have moments when we're not also. And so this is why there are two chapters. The first two chapters of part two of the book are all about practice, because a life of constant practice is absolutely necessary. Now, as a type A personality, what you're kind of saying is my my personality type and probably even my physiological type, my nervous system pattern, everything else are, I guess in the Hindu system, they'd call it pitta or vata. It's something that's moving, that's always doing. And that there's another typology that's based on the four quadrants of integral theory. And if you're, it has to do with which quadrant you orient from. And people who orient from the upper right quadrant are always asking the question, what needs to be done next? What needs to be done next? And that's kind of similar to what we're talking about here too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's a subtle contraction in that. I mean, there is something that you will increasingly outgrow as you become more and more and more mature and awake and happy and full. You know, that will naturally produce shifts that will affect whatever imbalances. And I'm not here to tell you how imbalanced you are, but you know, we all have them. There will be a harmonization of your nervous system. You will become more of a presence of wholeness in whatever ways are authentic for you. But you don't have to do that first. Like, there is so much that you're already doing and serving as that are, you know, sometimes it's a remembered idea of wholeness. And in the moment, you're pretty much in a separated consciousness and you're trying to make your life work and make contributions that are positive, but you're not as feelingly in touch with wholeness in some moments. And we've got to radically, radically, radically forgive ourselves for that. That's not, if we don't, if we're, you know, we disempower ourselves. And I'll tell you, the people who don't give a hoot about wholeness, you know, like the very disturbed people who are threatening our coherence as a social, our social fabric in America right now. They're not pulling their punches. They're empowering themselves as much as they can day and night, 24/7. Never back down, never apologize, never admit fault, never, you know, deny. And in a way, what's upon us is to become stronger, not to be, oh yeah, I'm forgetting my wholeness. Let me get passive and get really into my wholeness. And then maybe I'm trustable. And if I'm not totally trustable, I better not do anything. Nah. That ain't it. we're blowing it if we go there. So there's a moment that we're in now, culturally and humanly, in which we have to become friends with one another in ways that help us each individually, but all of us together, to recognize that we're in a time in which we're asked to grow into not just wholeness, but powerful wholeness, effective wholeness. I sometimes say that in a way, the growth issue of our time is, how can we learn to love and to be a presence of love that speaks with the inherent natural authority of love, which is by its nature more authoritative than anger or fear? How can we wake up from this idea that love is only gentle and kind and accommodating? And I've got some waking up to do in that regard myself. This is we're at the edge of something evolving in culture and evolving in us. It's never been the case before that the secret teachings of the highest spiritual traditions were available with a few clicks of a phone in your pocket. It's never been the case before that thousands of people were doing these high esoteric practices and in conversation with each other. It's never been the case that they were in touch with all of that and in touch with scientific method and principles of comparative religion and ways to take whatever they're doing and look at it to make subject object. It's never been the case that we've been in a moment like this. But we're in that moment right now. And we are the ones who in some sense, we are expressions of the unbroken wholeness, as we'll get into more and more. We are also unique individuals who, in some sense, are souls who took birth in this time. And this is our time. We are not people who rightly ought to be wishing we were born into a different time when we could, and there wasn't so much of an emergency. And no. We are the ones who were fitted with this time. This is our time. And so we're in a moment in which, if we're really honest with ourselves, we're always going to be a little too agitated or a little too passive or not effective enough or a little uptight or something. We're always going to be falling short a little bit. And if we hold back and we're qualified in our way of showing up because we think we have to be perfect, we're really going to shortchange the world. How can we keep practicing, keep absolutely noticing the ways we're falling short or getting out of balance, and recognize our responsibility to be a presence of wholeness in every moment and to really, really let this inherent wholeness of being find its way into the world through us so that we are the hands and feet and embodied bodies of wholeness. Mm-hmm. So as a type A personality, oops, I just got muted. I'm unmuted. Okay, good. Karen got muted, I see. Okay. Well, this is something we could talk about for a long time, but I do want to talk to some other folks. Thanks so much, Karen. That was lovely. Blessings. Okay, I don't see any other hands up, but I do see some questions. And there's one that was asked two sessions ago by Ed that I wanted to return to, or one session ago, I guess. Here we are. He said, you stress the inseparability of outer work and inner work, and I understand that both have to be robust and optimally effective activists. For those of us who are not up to top speed in either category, can you advise guidelines for how we can best allocate our time and energy between bettering our game and playing the game? For example, how do we choose tonight between the meditation class and the meeting of 350.org? That's a really good question. And it's, again, one of these ones that I can't just answer. Like, there isn't some little formula that I can offer. I think that some of us have really strong tendencies to only go to meditation classes and never go to 350.org, or the other way around. And you know who you are. You know that you need something that's going to restore your spirit, like a meditation class, or you know that there's a finding your way into action that's hard for you, and that exposing yourself to people who are willingly going there is absolutely necessary. I think maybe the way I can speak to this most helpfully might be to share from my own experience a little bit, which is to say, you know, I was raised as an activist, but then I went into the ashram and really did prioritize awakening and practice and personal transformation and becoming just a more well-rounded, a healthier human being for many years. And then in the last years, the process of writing this book and of launching this book and everything, including the course that has followed, I made a lot of choices. I saw what time it was on the planet in a starker way. And I began to feel that there was I felt a revulsion to what bourgeois spiritual culture was the term I used, which is this, what we want is not plausible deniability. We don't want to be able to show up at the meeting of the cool people and be able to say, yeah, I did the activist thing that I ought to be doing and the practice thing I ought to be doing. We're not trying to justify ourselves. What we're interested in is making a real difference. And I felt like I could make a real difference with this book. And I felt that I could make a real difference on the basis of having put out this book. And I veered a little too far the other direction. I invested my money and was willing to jeopardize some measure of financial security and was willing to push all my chips to the center of the table, to be all in for making a difference in the activist sense, for really making a mark in the world that would restore wholeness in all the ways I knew how. And I've been given over to that pretty intensively these last years. And in the process, I had begun to neglect my own self-care and my own well-being. And I'm really glad in a way that I did. Like, to some degree, you don't know that you're in the right territory. If you don't oversteer to the left and to the right, you don't know where the center is. And so there was something about my integrity, the depth of my passionate care, that I would jeopardize my own personal comfort in order to be an effective presence of wholeness that could make a difference in this world that needs it. I would not trust myself. I needed to do this in order to respect myself fully. And in recent time, I've begun to see, oh no, it's really important. And I've been re-emphasizing my practice for a while, but you know, in some way, just recently, I've kind of crested some, I don't know, I've been feeling good, you know, that the way that when your practice is really crisp, you begin to brighten more and more, and your subtle field expands. I've had that experience now, especially in the last few weeks. I'd gotten pretty exhausted really putting it out there, and I've been getting restored. And I'm reminded that, yeah, you got to course correct the other way. So it's a present moment decision. Tonight, some part of your own heart, Ed, knows that it's better right now for you to go to the meditation class, or go to the 350.org, or maybe to take a walk in nature, or maybe to have an intimate evening with your beloved, or maybe to read a good book. You know, it can be a lot of different things, or maybe to go down to the wrong side of town and just have some compassionate conversations with people whose lives are really on the edge, and to notice and feel your common humanity with the human condition and with the inherent suffering that's part of being alive. There's no formula, but your ability through your practice to rest at the deepest levels of your own intuition, to tap into an inner knowingness, that's what's going to guide that kind of a decision. Okay. Let's see. I don't think there's another hand up. So this is a good time for us to go into practice groups. And what I'd like us to do for our practice groups this time is to go into dyads, just to be with one other person. That means that when we put you into these groups, you'll be with one other person. And if you really can't, for some reason, participate, the person you're put with will be all by themselves. We hope that won't happen. We hope everybody will participate. But if you find yourself in one of these groups all by yourself, please immediately raise your hand and Sherry will find you and get you with somebody. And there may be one group of three. But most of us will be in dyads. And I'll show up as the, actually, I'll show up as the dyad partner if we have an extra person. So what I'd like you to do, we're going to, the way we're going to do this, you'll land in the dyads and you'll have a minute to just kind of say hi, share your names, say a couple words about yourself. And if you're shy, decide who's going to go first. I mean, it's really, since you're going to be going back and forth, it doesn't matter who goes first. And what I'd like you to do during this sharing is to look into the eyes of the image of the other person, and sometimes perhaps at your camera if they're not very close to each other. And I'd like you to speak from the heart back and forth and deepen into wholeness. And, you know, just speak for a little while. Like, some of these things are things you could go on about for a while, but just speak for 30 to 60 seconds and let the other person come back. And what we're going to do is take three turns of 3 minutes. And in each of those, well, they're not turns. You'll take many turns going back and forth, but for three exercises of 3 minutes each, we're going to complete three open sentences. And the first one will be, you know, breathing self-compassion and self-respect and allowing myself to enjoy the present moment. I feel whatever you feel. So one of you will say, I feel this. And the other person will take that in, respond, you know, be connected. But then breathing self-compassion and self-respect and allowing yourself to enjoy the present, I feel, and back and forth and back and forth. And then the second one will say, relaxing as open feeling awareness, I notice. And then the third turn, we'll do 3 minutes of that. And each, at the beginning of each of these three turns, you'll have 1 minute to kind of check in with each other. Then 3 minutes, you'll have a little message on the screen for the first 10 seconds with the open sentence. The second one will be relaxing as open feeling awareness, I notice. And you'll go back and forth saying that to each other. And then finally, trusting that I am not separate from anything I experience. That's the third one. And Sherry will put this in your chat window so you can refer to it. You'll all see it. So you can refer back to it if you get confused, and it will flash onto your screen. And then at the end of the last 3 minutes, there'll be a message that'll come on saying you're going to go back into the main room in 60 seconds, and you'll have a minute at the end to kind of complete, thank each other. If you want to have ongoing contact, you can somebody can tell each other an email or a phone number, and you know, we got a question about that after the last breakout session. Well, I hope that was helpful. What's going on in this work is integration. It's integral work, and it's challenging. Like, it's really a lot easier to feel wholeness when my eyes are closed and I'm hearing all kinds of cues and I'm just being totally passive. And then when I communicate that with somebody else, there can be something that is really good about that, but it takes it into another realm. And then if I get practiced at that, can I bring it into relation to some relationship with somebody who's not relating to me so supportively? Can I bring that depth of my field and feeling forward more and more and more broadly. Well, wholeness is unavoidable. It's always already our situation, and yet it's the context for the next two chapters. The next two chapters are the evolutionary perspective and the integral revolution. And each of them have to do with aspects of how a sophisticated understanding of wholeness that also accounts for all the parts. Like it wouldn't be as whole to just zoom back into wholeness and not be able to function in relationship to all the parts. And it wouldn't be as much wholeness if we could only experience it in the meditation hall or only with people who are fellow practitioners or only, you know, like the more we find our way into wholeness, the more it can accommodate, the more our intuition of wholeness is combined with our intellectual discrimination and with our embodied practice, our relational lives, our action in the world. All of that is being brought together. And what you'll see as we go through these chapters is that in some way we're crossing some apparent boundary. Like wholeness itself, as pure as it is, in our next chapter, we're going to be considering how we are all a living process. I am not a somebody. I am, there are billions or trillions maybe of living beings, some of them my own cells and some of them the bacteria that populate my body that are here. This process, I'm a process of processes within bigger processes, social, political, and cultural processes. So I am a whole made up of parts that is also a part of bigger wholes. And that's something we're going to unpack a lot more in 2 weeks in the integral revolution chapter, where we'll really go into the integral worldview. But in our next session on the evolutionary worldview, we're going to discover the profound implications of understanding the story of evolution and seeing ourselves in this amazing and inspiring context. A lot of what we deal with are stories. We're story making, we are creatures who, by our very nature of our neural networks, relate to stories and to our own roles within stories. And we'll get into that a lot in chapter 7 later on. But we can tell ourselves stories that are lies, stories of separation, stories of a dead world, and stories of a doomed world. And we can tell ourselves stories that account for the miraculous nature of existence more and more adequately. And this story of evolution, which is factually or scientifically demonstrated to be a more adequate telling of the story that we're all involved with, is really important for us to download and integrate and bring in as best we can. So this next chapter is another, I like all the chapters, obviously I wrote them. I wouldn't have written if it wasn't something I cared a lot about in each of them. But I think this will be a rich exploration. We're also at a point where those of you who are in groups who are using these deepening questions, or those of you who are using them on your own for journaling, or those of you who are just auditing the course and maybe haven't even always looked at the deepening questions, I recommend you do, because they take these ideas, they sharpen some of the distinctions, and they help you bring them into your field of felt experience so that you can, I mean, really the challenge of all this, of everything that is going on in our world right now, is how can we embody a different way of being? We're being asked by this critical evolutionary moment to become different kinds of beings. And so downloading this so that we can feel it is critical. And I'm very happy with these this guide and the deepening questions and the practices, both personal and social. One of the things that I mention in the document for this coming week is the importance of us getting engaged right now in activism, those of us who are in the United States, because the midterms are coming. And it's a different thing. I think it's important to donate money, and I totally recommend that we give as much support as we can to candidates whose understanding expresses wholeness so that we can have an effect on events in the future. But it's also really valuable to do something with your own hands and feet. So that I've recommended this practice of writing postcards to voters in swing districts who would tend, if they do vote, to vote in a way that would be a positive thing. And just sharing in a way, in a heartfelt way that they can see with a handwritten postcard, the fact that you care and that you're encouraging them to recognize that that what they do will affect you and everyone. Those kinds of practices are really helpful because you feel involved, you know, in a different way. You're engaging people. Or if you can go down and sign up and do phone canvassing, there are a variety of things that you can do. But embodying your activism and enacting, and you know, and it's not so easy always to do that in a way that actually communicates that inclusive wholeness. But doing that practice will sharpen and intensify and uplift and enrich your experience of everything we're learning in this course. There were a few questions that got chatted over to me during this session that I wasn't able to get to. I'm sorry. But I will save them, and if it can work, I will certainly try to get to them next week or beyond. So let's take a moment here, rooted in what we've experienced, deepening into this reality of wholeness. Let us also recognize that paradoxically, that undifferentiated wholeness, although it is also our nature, because of the targeting mechanism of our nervous system and the fact that we tend to return to the point of view of the body-mind, is also, in a way, our most intimate relationship, the one who has been with us, the one from whom our mother and father emerged, the one that gave rise to our mother's womb, the one who was there in all our moments of being alone, the one who will be there when we go through the death process, if we do have that experience of disappearing down a tunnel. That will be the one that is waiting on the other end of the tunnel. This oneness, in some sense, is both our true nature and our most intimate relation. This one is the source of grace. And so as we complete this session, I want to drop in and turn to that, turn to you, wholeness, turn to you, mystery, turn to you, source of grace, turn to you, beloved, turn to you who are beating my heart, turn to you who are the life pulse, the living presence of intelligence, life, evolution, the spark of the consciousness in me and in anyone who hears these words. Thank you. Oh, please help me relax and open deeper and deeper into gratitude, deeper and deeper into contact with the miracle, the grace that you are. Please awaken me beyond the contracting habit of the mind. Please awaken us all again and again into a life of real practice and real engagement, that we may be deepened and expanded and awakened, so that you may enter this world through us, as us. That we may know the joy and the confirmation, the empowerment, and the profound sense of meaning and purpose that comes from really making room for you to bless this world through us and as us, and to enjoy this world through us and as us, and to bear the discomforts and frustrations and challenges of being a person in a way that still allows you to really be known, even as we sometimes feel like a uniquely please find your way through whatever limits tend to arise in this constant pattern of contraction, that the wholeness that you are, the grace, the divinity, the mystery, the beauty, the truth, the goodness that you are, keep finding their way into our field, that we may intuit this deeper truth, even while we might suffer the temporary experience of separation. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody. Looking forward to being with you for our next session on the evolutionary perspective. Take care.
And thank you, Terry. And I just want to remind people that they are welcome to connect and reach out to each other in the Facebook group. And to please make sure that you've updated Zoom, so next time you're ready to go.
Oh, I needed to make an announcement I forgot to make. We're going to close that Facebook group after midnight tomorrow. So it's your last chance. And for instance, someone got in touch with us after our breakout groups in the last session and wanted to be in touch with the person. Well, the place to do that kind of connecting is the Facebook group. So please join, even if you don't expect to participate a lot. It's good to at least be a member so that you have access to it. And since we're going to turn it into a secret Facebook group so that we don't have constant interlopers trying to join the group, which is kind of hard to manage, we need to turn it into a secret group. So please join now. This is the last call. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Terry, and see everyone next week.